I'm Dorothy Wickenden. On today's Politics and More podcast, The New Yorker's Jelani Cobb talks with Ronald L. Davis. A former police officer, Davis ran the Justice Department's Office of Community-Oriented Policing Services during the Obama administration, and he has become a strong advocate for policing reform.
To look around the United States today is enough to make prophets and angels weep. James Baldwin wrote that in 1978, and the same thing can be said of the terrible moment in which we live now. The cruelty, the heedlessness with which George Floyd was killed is sickening to consider. With Floyd face down on the street and begging for his life, a Minneapolis police officer dug his knee into Floyd's neck for nearly 9 minutes. Every second of it captured on video by bystanders. But perhaps what was most appalling is that it was hardly exceptional. It follows the recent killings of Ahmaud Arbery and Breonna Taylor, and many other deaths at the hands of law enforcement in a decades-long litany of racist police abuse. Where do we go from here? Jelani Cobb has been writing about this for The New Yorker for years, and last week he spoke with both an activist based in Minneapolis and a former police officer. We'll hear first from Ron Davis, who served as an officer and then a police chief for almost 30 years, and he was then appointed to the Department of Justice by President Obama, where he led several initiatives to improve policing. Here's Jelani Cobb with Ron Davis.
Mr. Davis?
Yes, sir.
Thank you for your time. I guess I would ask you personally, when did you see this video of Mr. Floyd's death, and what was your initial reaction to it?
I think I might have saw it when it first came out. You know, I've seen a lot, obviously, in 35 years in law enforcement and working in the Obama administration for 3.5 years. I've seen a lot. But this one was shocking. It was obviously a heinous act. It was disgusting. And but immediately, besides thinking about the pain and agony this man is going through and his family having to watch this, you know, it did make me think, you know, where are we at right now? Why am I looking at this again? And what have we learned? And where are we going to go from this? And it put me also in a little bit of anger that we were heading in the right direction with a lot of work to do, but we allowed ourselves to get pulled back and to be paused and to stop and to accept that. And so I think where most of us are right now, there's still a sense of anger. And so I think the idea now is to turn that anger into action, is to start realizing that, you know, if the federal government is not going to do it the right way, we have the ability to do it ourselves other ways through voting, right? At the local level, at the state level, at the federal level, by demanding policies, by forcing departments to change. So there's still a lot of work we can do, even though this administration doesn't seem willing to do it. We'll do it without them, and then we'll replace them. So that's my feeling, was really frustration and anger.
Yeah, I think one of the things about, you know, that video and the trauma, collective trauma, that it imposed on people was this division, I think, in what people saw and what they believed it represented. And so one side of the people I was talking to would say that this is a miscarriage of justice. It is a seriously broken system, that something is malfunctioning in the ways that this institution relates to people in the community, specifically African Americans in the community. But another line, people said to me that, no, this is exactly how the system was intended to function, that it is doing what it was created to do, to enforce and reinforce the subordination of Black and poor people. What do you make of that?
I think the system is working perfectly. Mm-hmm. It is working as it was intended to work. It is working as designed. That's why we still have structural racism and institutional deficiencies. And the more people acknowledge that, the more we can get away from the we versus them. Structural racism and institutional deficiencies mean that many of our brothers and sisters in blue are victim to the system as well. And so when I look at my department, and I was guilty as charged, I made a lot of program changes. I made a lot of activity changes and try to do a lot of things in fighting crime and reentry and try to be as progressive, but I was not successful in changing the basic operational systems. We really have to start over again. we need to go back to square one and ask ourselves, if we had to build this thing today, what would it look like? What would police be used to do? And what would be the role of police in a democracy? But if you have operational systems that are flawed, then even good people have bad outcomes, and bad people get to operate with impunity. So in law enforcement, it looks like we keep saying the vast majority are good men and women who are honorably serving. I concur. But many of those good men and women are still having terrible outcomes, very disparate to communities of color, not because of malice, because we're still using the same systems that were designed on purpose to oppress communities of color. We cannot forget our history, that we were used to reinforce and to protect the institution of slavery. We were there to enforce Jim Crow laws and black codes. We're using tactics that have, even today, a disparate impact and outcomes on communities of color. And we're doing it in the name of public safety, and it's having the opposite effect.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, you know, we see this come up again and again. And I think one of the things that made the death of Mr. Floyd such a spectacle and such a horrific spectacle was the fact that this video is almost 9 minutes long. And at any moment in there, a person could have intervened or, Mr. Chauvin could have changed his mind. And just an infinite number of opportunities for Mr. Floyd to still be alive right now. But most of the time when we see these kinds of situations, they're not like that. They involve shootings. You know, in the United States, there were more than 1,000 people who were killed by law enforcement in 2019. And, you know, why do we have so many fatal encounters between citizens and police in the United States?
You know, and that is a great question. And the first part of the question is there's 1,000, but as you know, Jelani, and I've heard you cover this very well, that's a number that mostly the community and media has counted because we don't track. We don't actually track when local governments kill one of our citizens.
Yeah, nobody has those numbers.
Exactly. So the first part is to make it important enough to require every police department in the United States, all 16,000, to track it. The second part is to take a look at the use of deadly force. We need to better understand people that are under mental crisis or psychological distress. We need to have better de-escalation, which we started to do. We need to make sure officers understand that the symptoms of someone in an autism-related crisis is the exact same symptom that we were teaching them of a person that's about to attack. Mm-hmm. But if we don't collect, if we don't analyze, if we don't learn, if we don't debate, then we'll keep doing the same thing over and over again.
Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago, you wrote an opinion piece about the complexities of being a police officer and being a black man in this country. In one moment, you described teaching your children what to do if they're stopped by the police, a conversation that's familiar to a lot of black parents. And yet, I imagine that was also complicated by the fact that you're an officer.
You know, and thank you for bringing that article up. It was about my truth as a black man and a black cop. I came to the conclusion that the only way for me to balance them was to accept each as the full truth that they represent. First part, as a black man, I do have to teach all three of my kids, two girls and a boy, what to do when stopped by the police. Now, that says a lot because I'm teaching them how to survive a deadly encounter with people that's wearing the same uniform that I wore for 30 plus years. Mm-hmm. Right? That is the truth. I have to acknowledge the truth of the role that police have played in our history, the role that we still play in discriminatory practices and disparate treatment. But being a cop has exposed me to working with some of the most honorable and courageous men and women I've met in my life. And so I know this is not about a field being just saturated with a bunch of bad apples. But here's the one thing I would tell every officer of color. The profession will try to change that reality. And over the years, I still always hear that, look, you're blue, you just happen to be black, right? That's the kind of concept of how you can get a profession to operate with one mind, a groupthink. And we have to push back from that as law enforcement. And I should tell my colleagues, I am not a cop that happens to be black. I'm a black man that chose to be a cop. I can stop being a cop. I will never stop being a black man. And they're not exclusive. They do not conflict with each other. And I will not allow you to allow them to conflict. Right. And in fact, my experiences of a black man should help me make me a better cop. So we have to be willing to go into these agencies. Otherwise, diversity means nothing. We have to be able to go in these agencies and embrace our heritage, our culture, and stand there as a proud Black man or woman in a uniform and make sure that as you're developing strategies and tactics, that that life experience, that culture, who you are, what you represent, comes out. Otherwise, diversity is just a showpiece to be able to say, look, we have five Black guys on the department or five Black women. So I think it's a struggle, but it doesn't have to be. That two things can coexist. I can accept being a proud member and a cop for 30 years and thinking that my people that I serve with are honorable men and women, but I can absolutely say without hesitation in my colleague's face, like I'm doing right now, but we still are still plagued with structural racism, institutional deficiencies, and we are not holding ourselves accountable the way the community deserves.
Hmm. What do you make of calls to defund police departments or to defund police?
I think it's a good idea. Here's what I would offer for the defunding. It makes sense if you're going to defund and reinvest in those areas that would reduce the need to use the police to begin with, right? So not as a punishment to police, but to say that I don't want you to be the primary responder to a personal mental crisis.
Hmm. Well, we'll see how this plays out. And like you, a lot of people will be watching it very closely. Thank you again for your time on a day where I know you must have a lot of demands on it. And stay safe.
Thanks.
Jelani Cobb, speaking with Ron Davis, who works on reforming police departments across the country.